I'm talking today to Professor Rob Moody, who is Professor of Public Health at the University of Melbourne and at the University of Malawi, and also to Jane Martin, who is the Executive Manager of the Obesity Policy Coalition. Thanks for your time today.
Pleasure.
You two have co-authored, along with Penny Tolhurst, a perspective for our 4th of April issue on prevention and the burden of chronic diseases in Australia. What is that burden, monetarily and in other ways?
You know, 9 out of 10 deaths are related to non-communicable diseases in Australia.
Yep.
They're related, in a sense, to 4 major risk factors. And that's related to physical inactivity, poor diet, tobacco and alcohol. And, I mean, the cost, I guess, you can see now in the Australian healthcare system is large and growing. And, you know, the point that we're really trying to point to make is that unless we do start to invest more cleverly in prevention, then the burden on the healthcare system will be simply unsustainable.
So how much of the public health spending we spend now is actually on prevention?
Well, the whole public health spend is really 1.5% of our recurrent healthcare spending. So it's minimal. I mean, compared to other countries like Canada and New Zealand and Finland, other comparable countries,
yeah,
it's way less. And even though we have, you know, very good life expectancy, the point is we won't be very competitive in another 5, 10 or 15 years. You might even say it was our failure to convince, our political leaders, our community leaders, that investment in prevention is both, you know, important for health outcomes, but important for the public purse as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seems that over the years, I mean, that interest in prevention, or the push for prevention, has declined. And to me, that's enormously disappointing. Jane,
yeah, I think it is a failure on the part of public health to push prevention, but it's a lack of interest by government in the policy space, as well as the political will. And we understand why the political will is lacking, because you need a lot of political capital, you need a lot of courage, because you're taking on often big industries in addressing these issues. And government has done a very good job taking on the tobacco industry. But we need to learn by doing, as Rob says, and do a lot more. But the evidence is not as clear. Governments don't feel as comfortable. But many, many of the actions of the Preventative Health Task Force and the strategy that was developed, and it's very, very good, have not been enacted, have not been followed. And that's the failure of governments, not to act on these evidence-based policies, a staged, phased approach, learn by doing and move. And we've just seen inaction and governments sitting on their hands while not even increasing prevention. And some of these policies that could be enacted are quite cheap. You know, they're not expensive to put into place, but those policies have not occurred.
I think in your paper you mentioned that there were 32 alcohol specific recommendations, there were 27 obesity specific recommendations.
Both areas, the majority haven't been completed.
I mean,
in both areas, sort of, you know, 5 or 7 have been done out of the number, but there's still, you know, a large number of the most important ones, by the way, that have yet to be enacted. I mean, they're the ones around the real need to diminish the huge saturation advertising to young kids, either around junk food, junk drinks or alcohol. You know, so much so that that's what our kids grow up with. That's what the average Australian kid is growing up with, saturation advertising around junk food and junk drinks, let alone alcohol. I mean, sport, the kings of Australian sport, and they're mainly kings, not queens, are ambassadors of junk food, junk drinks and alcohol. I mean, it's such, but they're not of tobacco. I mean, you know, as Jane said, we know what to do in this area, and we know that you cannot rely on an industry to self-regulate itself. You know, it just can't do that.
Yep.
Their job is to make money, and I completely agree with that. But the point is, they can't just make money, you know, by actually destroying Australians' health. And, you know, our job as health professionals is to continually point this out, not only to, in a sense, to government, but also to my own profession, to the medical profession. Not only do we need clinicians who are really starting to point these things out. They, the diabetologists, they won't be able to manage the number of people with diabetes in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, they have to be able to, in a sense, push pressure back up the upstream, if you like, and say, okay, what can we do in terms of, say, advertising or in terms of taxation, which we know, and we've seen the Tory government in the UK bring in a soda tax, let alone we know the Mexican government's brought in one, and we've shown that it's actually worked. These are the sorts of things that aren't necessarily easy to do. They take some political courage, they take some community courage,
yep.
But they're absolutely doable. We've done them in our other areas where we're calling upon, in a sense, our society to do that with areas around, you know, with healthy eating and with harm from alcohol as well.
Yep. Jane, you must have been really happy to hear about the UK sugar tax. What will it take to get that sort of thing happening here? Will it work in Australia, given how it's working in Mexico, for example?
I think if it's big enough, so what's recommended through the modelling is 20% tax.
Right.
I think a better model would be not to tax the manufacturers but put a tax on the end price, so an excise tax, sales tax, because then it's a signal to the consumer around price, and we know that works. So I think, look, I think Australians are very, very high consumers of sugary drinks. Added sugars, the biggest contributor of free sugars in our diet.
Mm-hmm.
The WHO has been very strong around its recommendations, and this is what the paper speaks to. And it's common sense. And 85% of Australians support a tax on sugary drinks if the money's used to fund childhood obesity programs. So look, the public's over the line. It's the politicians and the public health groups who need to catch up to advocate for this. But I think the community has a good understanding around sugary drinks, and that's been helped by films like That Sugar Film and a lot of the documentaries. Yeah. The public's there. I think it's the politicians who aren't up to date with what the community thinks, and the community's not saying this when they're meeting their politicians. Yeah. There's other more pressing issues that are taking the place of public health. It's sort of somehow a poor relation. There's other more pressing needs that people tend to speak to, and this is something that's sitting in the background that's causing huge amounts of disability, in particular in our working population. The economic impacts are huge. People are living with diabetes, and its impact for many, many years. It's not like smoking and you get lung cancer and die. Mm. People are living very lives with disabilities, and the biggest cost is for families.
Yeah.
The family pays, and this is concentrated socioeconomically. So lower socioeconomic families are really struggling with the costs of treating these diseases and the associated problems with having someone that is living with a disability for a long time. The fact that the policy seems to be not to put the GST on fresh fruit and vegetables, I think, is a really, really important step.
Mm, yeah.
But we need to also remember that before the GST came in, the wholesale sales tax on sugary drinks, on soft drinks, was 30%.
Wow.
So the real price of sugary drinks, in fact, went down when the GST came in.
Mm.
And we need to do price both sides. It's around supply as well as price. So we need to make sure that we're reducing the demand for these drinks through advertising, controls on advertising and marketing around alcohol and unhealthy food and drinks, but also about availability. You know, these sort of products shouldn't be available in schools, for example, these high sugar, high fat sugary drinks.
Coming back to the soda tax issue, what a great way of replacing sponsorship of junk food and junk drinks in sport or of alcohol, for example. As we did with tobacco. I mean, you replace harmful advertising with health promotion. And because it's we, the punter, who pays anyway. You know, whether it's paying by buying a can of Coke, you're paying for the sponsorship. Well, you know, either way we pay.
Yeah.
It's not the largesse of the junk food and junk drink companies or the alcohol companies. That's just their marketing budget. It's a very easy way to deal with these issues that often come up to obstruct any progress in this area. Is, oh no, this will ruin community football or community cricket or whatever. It won't. I mean, it's a simple replacement. We've seen that done with tobacco here. We've seen it done with alcohol in other countries like Thailand. So, you know, for me, it's a no-brainer.
So basically, politicians are just scaredy cats.
Well, I think at the moment that the politicians, I mean, I think because of the mining tax and the carbon tax, I'm more scared of the Australian Food and Grocery Council than they are of voters. And until we actually change that dynamic where, you know, that voters really do count, and that's why, to a certain extent, you know, we do need a greater level of you know, parental interest and parental activism, I guess, around these issues, because it's the health of their children that actually counts.
What's been the impact of abolishing the preventative agency?
Well, I mean, one of the issues is that you take away a sort of central capacity. You know, the job of the preventative health agency was really to drive policy change and evidence around this and bring the nation together on these issues. We know we are actually a nation, not just states. And you know, we know a lot of work is being done at the states. At the same time, $400 million was taken out of states' budgets for prevention. And that has had an enormous impact on the workforce in virtually every state. Fortunately, some states like Victoria have said, okay, well, we'll try and continue this, but it's really tough. It's like what's happening in the healthcare area as well. I mean, you know, states rely on federal money. We collect tax federally so that we can run programs by the state. That's normal. We need revenue. Yeah. And that's why, to a certain extent, you know, soda tax, coming back to that, it's another source of revenue.
How do we wave our magic wand and make things change? What do we do next?
Well, I think we need some strategies and policies. We don't have an obesity strategy. I mean, it's a huge problem. No one can deny that. It's growing. We can see we're having no impact. And
really? It's that measurable? No impact at all?
No impact. And it's... Yeah. No, this is exactly what this paper shows. We're not going to meet the targets. There's no hope at all. It's just, we're just flapping in the wind.
You know, the average male's put on 6 kilograms in the last 25 years. The average female's put on 5. Yeah. I mean, we are growing as a nation.
Not in a good way.
No, and I would just think, well, imagine if 15 years ago we'd actually implemented sensible policies.
Yeah.
You know, that in fact that hadn't occurred. And in terms of how... you know, healthier and lighter we'd be. I mean, as a nation, and that's what other nations have done. We haven't. Why?
Imagine all the money that would have been freed up.
Well, exactly.
Yes. And it's these kinds of behaviours, you have to educate and change. It takes time then for the health system to benefit. We know now retrospectively with tobacco control, which is a huge success, which this paper illustrates, that it's a combination of strategies. Now, you don't know until afterwards which was the sweet spot, what was the combination of policies.
Yeah.
So you really have to try where the evidence sits best and put together a few levers. We know price is a really important lever. We know that really strong, good, well-done social marketing is impactful. We know reducing the availability and making places smoke-free, but also taking, you know, unhealthy foods out of schools and restricting availability of alcohol in sporting venues, for example, where, you know, young people gather.
Changing the culture.
That affects change. So we should do all reducing advertising and marketing of these unhealthy products. They all create an environment where the healthy choice becomes the easy choice and it changes social norms. And that's a long, slow process. And to expedite this is going to have to take some very bold steps. And, you know, I can see this going into the future and we'll all look back and go, why didn't more happen?
And we're almost doing that now.
Yeah.
I mean, we're almost doing that. So the irony is that, you know, we have collectively put on weight as a nation. If we want to solve this, we have to collectively do it, take it off. So it's not like it's, you know, pointing the finger at individuals will not work.
Yeah.
And it's about creating an environment that actually helps us all manage healthy weight. And that's from, you know, what Jane's talking about in terms of pricing, in terms of regulation. I mean, even the food labelling, you know, it's, again, such a no-brainer that we should be having a interpretable traffic light system which, you know, most people can understand. And that's something that the industry needs to be brought in line. We could halve the amount of sugar. We can, you know, take off the amount of salt. Do that gradually over 5 or 10 years, no one will notice. Why? Because it's all gone up and we didn't notice. I mean, it's not rocket science.
apart from tobacco, in a lot of ways, industries left to self-regulate. Yeah. Now, there's just they've evaluated this responsibility deal in the UK around alcohol and food and drinks, and even industry said it hasn't worked. And part of the reason it hasn't worked is it only applies to those companies that sign up.
Yeah.
So the early adopters almost get penalised, and a level playing field makes it easier. It's better. They know that. And now in the UK, they're saying that. They're talking about that. So we have been, you know, what we are left with, if there's anything, is self-regulation, basically, and not much else. And that's not enough in prevention. That's not good enough. We know that. And I don't know how much longer we need to wait to before more happens.
I think we need a really systematic approach. I think we need a sustained commitment. So coming into power and undoing what the last people did is not terribly helpful.
We have
a bipartisan approach to tobacco and the road toll. People would not come and undo that. And we need to take the same approach with other risk factors.
But it's a really key point. I mean, it is the notion. And I, you know, I think that's our failure, that we haven't been able to drive a bipartisan, or in fact tripartisan, or you know, quadripartisan approach. And that's in a sense why, you know, it has to be a non-political issues. And you know, this is something for us as a community, or as a society, or as a nation as a whole. And that's what we're looking for, is in a sense all sides of politics to take these issues on. We realise they aren't easy.
Yeah.
We realise that the industries will fight them because that's what they do. And we understand that's the sort of natural order of things, but it doesn't mean that that we have to capitulate.
Yeah.
If you look at virtually every successful public health, you know, approach we've had, then primary care has been awfully important, an essential part of that. You know, whether it's the tobacco or skin cancer, even the road trauma, I mean, in terms of both primary medical care, but the primary sort of line of service of the police, you know, without them, wouldn't have worked. So, you know, the notion of people who are constantly in contact with the population at large, they are essential. And it's also, I mean, in the medical profession as role models, again, you know, the more that, in a sense, the colleges take that seriously, both for their own health, and as role models, as leaders in the community, then the better.
Yeah. So those kinds of partnerships, they share the load, but politically, you know, the politicians know that they're going to have a large number of groups who are organised who will support if they do come out and push a policy or take a stand. And I think that's really critical to getting change, is to for the politicians to understand who's going to back them.
Yeah.
And they need to know that there's broad, not just community support, but of those leaders, support, like the medical community and the colleges, that they're going to back it as well. And again, we've got this, in some cases, we have a policy vacuum. In other cases, we don't. Things are a lot more advanced, particularly around alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, the leadership of the medical profession, I think, and the nursing profession is really needed.
Yeah. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.